This podcast is brought to you by my own Emotional Workouts for Your Well-Being training program. If you have no idea what that is, no worries. It's basically like a personalized workout program, but instead of doing 100 squats, you're working out your mind, your well-being, and your emotions. Think workouts, but for your well-being, backed by thousands of years worth of philosophy. When I was starting out in life, I would have benefited so much by having someone like Rumi or Plato or Aristotle to just be there by my side and coach me so I could design a life that was meant for me. Unfortunately, that's not available. Emotional workouts are the closest thing to just that. As you navigate through your life, emotional workouts remove all that stuff that gets in the way when you're trying to make those tough life choices. You can check it out at emotionalworkouts.com. Again, it's emotionalworkouts.com. Okay, on to the show. Welcome to today's episode. Today we have Greg Nance joining us. Greg is the founder and CEO of Chase Future, the world's fastest growing admissions consulting platform. Greg is going to chat with us about the future of admissions consulting and everything he's learned in his years in this area. On top of that, Greg is going to talk to us about his other side. Greg is an insane adventure kind of guy. I mean, it's my opposite. He has jogged through 31 countries. He's finished 10 marathons. He has actually run the UK coast to coast 70 miles. And if that wasn't enough, he actually ran across the Gobi Desert, which is 250 kilometers. It's essentially running, I think he said, 8 marathons back to back. He did that with a sprained knee and sunburns that were unbelievable. We're going to hear all of the details. I was at the edge of my seat, and I know you will be too. An incredible guy, and how he brings all of that to his business and how it supported his life. Stay tuned. I know this is going to be a fun episode. If you like what you hear, hop over to iTunes, leave a review, hit subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. I am so excited. Today we have Greg Nance on the show, and he is joining us all the way from Shanghai, China. Hey, Greg.
Hi, Laura. Thank you again for the invitation.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. Your story is amazing. I have had the opportunity to hang out with you. Is your relationship with Ted, and you've come through Chicago. We had a little dinner, but we've only known each other for a little while. But I found your story just unbelievably compelling. If you check out gregnance.org, you can see what I'm looking at and what I've heard some about. But, you know, mountaineer, ultra marathoner, I mean, your story about the Gobi crossing and how you went across the desert, it was just captivating. I thought we could get into it today, talk about it, and really just hear a little bit behind the curtain of somebody that I've never talked to anybody with such an ambition. So I guess to start off the podcast, Greg, I'm fascinated. And I know the listeners will be fascinated. You're how old at this point?
I am 27 years old.
27. And you've climbed how many mountains?
I think a couple dozen now. A
couple dozen. Is it still, you've jogged 31 countries. Is that still up to date?
Yeah, maybe a couple more since I last updated the site. So.
Finished 10 marathons. You've run the coast of the UK, which is 70 miles. I mean, as somebody who is unable to run around the block, I'm dumbstruck by this. And you've done a 2-week 40-mile hike just for fun. Could you just take a minute, like bring us into what motivated this? What was the beginning of it? Is this something that you've loved? I know I'm asking a whole bunch of questions, so I'll start with them. But tell us, like, how did this start? Where was the beginning? Is this something from childhood? How did this get going with you?
Yeah, totally. So the biggest influence for me is both the place I grew up and the people I grew up with. I'm from Bainbridge Island, Washington, which is 6 miles west of Seattle, this heavily forested Emerald Isle, middle of the Puget Sound there. And I grew up in a household full of adventure. My father is a longtime outdoorsman. My sister, brother, mother, and I were all into it as well. And so my favorite weekend growing up was heading out to the Olympic or Cascade Mountains. I, after school, would climb trees with my brother. We would hack our way through the thickets and explore miles and miles of thickly wooded forest. And in the experience of that, you start wading through rivers and trying to catch fish and just kind of living living your version of Tom Sawyer there in the woods. And doing that growing up, I just developed a real appreciation for nature and was an athlete growing up, and over time started trying to challenge myself in the outdoors. I found it was a wonderful place to kind of think and reflect, have a moment to yourself, and to experience nature's wonder. And that, I think, has developed over time. And as I've gotten a little older, a little stronger, I'm now trying to take on bigger challenges while remembering those roots and doing as much of it as I can with my my family and in the beautiful Evergreen State, as well as out in the world.
Okay, but I got to back up because there's so many people. I'm not one of them. I grew up in a city, but like I'm sure listening, there's tons of people who've grew up in nature, right? Even had parents that took them out. How do you get from being a kid who's like brought up in an environment where, sure, you're out playing with your family, your brother, but how do you go from there to, you know, this level of challenge, personal ambition? Can you tell us what was the first thing you signed up for and what was the thought behind it?
Yeah, I remember a vivid moment. I was no more than 6 years old. I'm challenged by my baby brother, 14 months my junior, to climb this tree. And it's the biggest tree in our yard. And it's, you know, somewhere between 150 and probably 200 feet. I start scaling it. I remember as I get close to the top, I'm shaking. I'm quite nervous. I'm also quite focused. I reach the top. And from the top of this tree, extraordinary views. I can see mountains in all directions. It's a clear day, which is a little rare for us Seattleites. It's a clear day. I'm looking out and just totally beautiful, serenely beautiful, these mountain peaks, jagged snow-capped mountains in the distance. And I remember having this kind of captivating thought that I want to climb each one of these. I want to experience that. And yeah, I want to see it. I want to feel it. And that was a thought I had when I was, you know, a child. I was probably the summer between kindergarten and first grade.
Wow.
I slowly make it back down this tree. And my little brother, who's my chief rival at the time, he's excited because we both talked about climbing this tree. I'm the first one to do it. And there's a little bear hug exchange between us. And I think that was the start of our adventure career. And for the next 12 years, while we're both living at home together, we're challenging each other to try this, try that, do this, do that. And over time, I think both of us develop a kind of a mental edge about it. And we also become each other's kind of biggest cheerleader and fan and motivator. And so I think that part of the background is totally key for where I am today.
And when you say like cheerleader and fan, I mean, two brothers that close in age, was it also a competition on some level? I mean, I can't imagine.
Oh, totally. Totally. My parents, when I'm 8 or 9, my brother and I have been scuffling so much. My parents buy us a punching bag and a pair of boxing gloves so that we can take out our aggression on the punching bag. But of course, we're actually in the basement boxing each other, you know. So it's one of these 25-year rivalries now. So
all right, because I mean, you're painting this picture like it's just nothing but brotherly love.
Yeah, not quite.
Okay, cool. So I mean, wow, at 6 years old, it's like something got you past. I mean, again, I climbed a tree too. I mean, you know, I'm a city kid, but I did get up a couple and I totally freaked out at some point and came down. So you, you even had that ambition at that young age to like get to that next level. And it just hit you at that time that's something that, you know, meant something to you. That's incredible. I mean, most of us climb halfway up, freak out and climb down, right?
I was freaking out, but yeah, I did decide to keep going. That's true.
maybe that brother out there. So you've signed up for all these marathons. What was first? What was the first? Was it a mountain climb? Was it a marathon? What was the first thing?
Yeah, I was 12 years old and I climbed Mount St. Helens in Southern Washington. Yep, 12 years old. I climbed it with my father, my sister, and my brother and I. And I remember we got to the ranger station at the base of the mountain on our way up. And the ranger said, hey, like, I think maybe the lady, my 16-year-old super fit sister, maybe she can make it, but these two boys, no way. These 12 and 11-year-olds, you know, I wouldn't even start them. And that was a little bit of fire for us. We said, you know, my dad, who completely believes in us, has taught us everything he knows, said, look, my boys, we're going to make it. We're going to do it safely, but we're going to make it. And I remember that being total fire that as we climbed this mountain, which for 12-year-old was, yeah, my legs were burning the entire time. I remember the I want to accomplish this to both prove to that fellow and to prove to myself that I can do this.
So for those of us out there that have ambitions, I'm going to just fess up and say I'm one of them. I mean, and we, you know, have some leg burn and we're like, done. Tell us, like, what motivates you? You know, the pain is kicking in, you're feeling the burn. And I get, like, you've set the goal and I get that you're have some ambition, but like psychologically, what are the tricks or tools or what have you come up with over the years that have gotten you past so many of these experiences?
Yeah, I always try to remember my motivation. Why am I doing this in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I find that the longer I've been thinking about something, the more time I put into training and preparing, the comparatively straightforward it is for me to push away the doubt and to push away feelings of resignation, because I think those are natural. I think everyone cycles through those thoughts. But the key is, hey, why am I doing this? And when I think you have put in the work, whether it's training for that, you know, the 5K turkey trot or something a little tougher, those thoughts actually can, I think, propel you forward. And so continued, you know, positive thinking is, I think, critical to this, as well as deep breaths when you're really challenged there, and literally just putting one foot in front of the next. And rarely has something so simple been so trying. It's really easy for me to say that here at sea level in Shanghai. It's harder when you're up high in a mountain or you're late in a race and you're totally dying. You just feel awful. But it's really the mind that's going to keep powering you forward. I think your mind will fall apart before your body does. Mm-hmm. Humans, I think we come from all of us are super endurance athletes. We just don't know it yet. Our ancestors were chasing down megafauna, these huge, huge creatures of Africa and Europe and Asia and the Americas, and hunting them by running them to death, in essence. And that is part of us. We have way more endurance. We have way more courage than we realize. The key, I think, is to tap that, to find what's already inside of us, to bring it out.
And so when you say you go into this place of why am I doing this, what is your motivation? Like, you put the work in, but what do you say to yourself in those really desperate moments?
Yeah, I remember a Steve Prefontaine quotation that to give anything less than your best is to sacrifice the gift. And I'm a firm believer that each of us have been endowed with unique talents, unique attributes, and it's up to us to kind of become the artist of our life and to figure out, you know, I have these talents, what can I do with it? And for me, I think I have a gift for maybe tenacity, resilience, and just the ability to keep going when maybe others wouldn't. And I want to figure out, hey, how far can that take me? And I want to continue refining that and developing it through physical and mental conditioning so that I'm able to achieve some things that will, you know, make a good story when I'm telling my granddaughter or grandson someday, along with things that challenge me to be my best person now as well.
I love that. You know, so many people talk about their gifts as much more tangible, like, right, yeah, I'm a painter or a writer or, right? Like, I haven't heard anybody say really my biggest gift is my tenacity or resilience. And I mean, when you're obviously an entrepreneur as well, is that something that you then just apply across your life? Like, you think of it more as these personal attributes than where you place it. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that's totally true. If I'm having a business challenge, the first thing I do is I throw on my running shoes early the next morning and I spend 3 or 4 or 5 hours thinking about it. And more times than not, I have a pretty decent solution I've crafted by the end of that training run. And likewise, if I'm, you know, something's wrong with my running, you know, maybe I have a sore knee or sore hip from training, I'm going to dive into the business even more so. And then I'm going to get through that injury or that illness with kind of that mental focus. So I think the two, they're really symbiotic. You actually get better as a distance runner with the long, hard hours of entrepreneurship. And likewise, you get better as an entrepreneur with the focused training that goes into running or really any activity that you're putting significant time and effort to hone your craft. Because all of us, you know, we're all works in progress, every single one of us. And I think the key is to commit to the process of improvement. And we can baffle ourselves with how far we can go with that focus, with that determination.
So somebody's out there who's like, okay, like, I'm not climbing a mountain. I'm not, you know, but I want to do my first marathon, right? But, you know, I'm really struggling and I'm not finding the time. And, you know, I work a lot of hours. Like, what do you say to that person who just, you know, is having trouble getting off the starting block of finding that tenacity or that resilience? Like, what would be your recommendation?
Yeah. So I think we're really sculpted by the habits that we build in our life, the things that sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing. One thing that really helped me get going in my own running, I was coming off a bad injury. I was in a motorcycle accident and was told by my doctor, hey, I'm not sure if you'll ever be able to run again. And hearing that news from my doctor was totally crushing, because running is one of the things that I love most in the world. And the idea of not being able to run ever again was just overwhelming, yeah. Totally crushing. For me to get back at it, I felt the same way as maybe someone who has a dream of running a 5K race or a marathon someday, but hasn't yet been able to put in that time or kind of figured out how to get started. For me, it was very, very environmental. I knew before I could run, I had to get limber again. I had to get my muscles redeveloped. I had to get literally the skin healing from my elbows and knees that were really roughed up. And I had to heal these bone bruises. And so for me, environmentally, I literally had a bag of ice that they would greet me, which reminded me, hey, go grab the frozen peas from the freezer, ice up my knees and my elbows so that those bruises start to heal, put on my ointment so that this healing can take place. Here's this, we call it surgical tubing. It's basically this flexible rubber that you're able to do some very minimal strength training on. We're talking 5 or 10 pounds of force. But at that time, that was all my poor arms and legs could take. And with these small environmental tweaks, I was able to heal much faster and get back on my feet, literally. And I think the lesson there to someone that's has a big physical goal or a big goal in their personal development is to structure your environment in such a way to encourage the action that you're seeking. If you're trying to run a 5K or a marathon, putting running shoes by your bedroom door so that when you wake up, the first thing you're seeing is, oh, that's my reminder. All I need to do is slip on these running shoes, and then I'm going to run around the block once. And if I'm feeling better than that, maybe I'll do it twice, or I'll go out on a new trail or down a new route. Mm-hmm. Those environmental factors, totally critical. And that's how I train too. I literally have my winter gear and my running shoes right next to my bed so that I can't give myself a good excuse in the morning. It's just everything's right there. Strap it on. The keys are already in my pocket. I've already got my phone and my music and my audiobooks right there. And it's time to go for it.
Yeah, the prep and getting yourself into that state. And, you know, what I'm hearing you said earlier in the podcast is really literally it's one foot in front of the other again, right? Like, is this kind of the theme for you of, you know, just take each piece as it comes and not to think too hard about the end goal?
Totally. Because if you're thinking about 26.2 miles, I only have 6 months to get ready for this. That's overwhelming. Whereas if it's, I'm going to go for a 1 mile jog today, and then I'm going to walk 4 miles tomorrow, and then I'm going to run 2 miles the next day. All of a sudden, that feels a little bit more manageable when we're taking it that step at a time. So that is a philosophy I live by. I think you can accomplish most anything with that mentality and enough pluck and luck paired together.
Yeah. So set the goal that you're say it's a 5K. I want to do a 5K, but then let go of thinking about that outcome and then just focus on, okay, what am I doing Monday? What am I doing Tuesday? I think that's
right.
Great advice. I was actually at a spa at Maryvale. This is so pathetic to admit to you of all people, but they had these little obstacles to test you and help you learn how to overcome fears. And one of them was climbing a 2-story pole that when you got to the top, it like kind of wavered, right? So if you think of a telephone pole, it feels like it's blowing in the wind. And there was a little tiny piece of wood on top and you needed to climb up there and then jump and you were just going to bungee jump down. But I got to the top and I didn't realize it was going to be blowing around and freaked out a little. And the woman who's trained to get people through this just kept saying to me, you know, just think about your left foot. That's all I want you to do is just think where you're going to put your left foot, right? And it really stuck with me as advice that I think about in life. Do you take that same philosophy into your work life and other areas?
I totally do. I think the thinking about the left foot analogy is a great one. And it's, you know, what's the small action I could take here at 9 a.m. to move things forward? What's the, you know, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And I try to be really present with training or in business so that you're kind of optimizing for the moment, doing the best you can to lay the foundation.
Yeah, I think so many people think about that end goal endlessly and feel that everything they're doing outside of achieving it, like, you know, a marathon or selling a business or whatever it is, it feels insignificant. But I'm a big fan of celebrating those everyday little things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Huge. Because one of the challenges of the inverse philosophy is that like big moment doesn't come that often. You know, the big, you're not running a marathon every day, right? So it's, what are the small things that you can get excited about that really are signals that you're on the right track? It's a milestone that you're moving toward your goal. And I think that's maybe a mentally healthier way to approach it, and one that I think is more sustainable motivation as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. We got to get back because, I mean, you told me the story, but I want you to share this Gobi Desert, 250 kilometers. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. I get the marathons. I'm with you on the tree, but like, really, like what was in your mind when you said, you know what, this is where I'm going. This is what I'm going to do, and actually stick to it and not just, you know, hide under a bed the day it's time.
Yeah. So the motorcycle crash I referenced, I get this crushing news. Yeah. I'm feeling kind of devastated. And I know that the only way I can get out of this funk is if I set a completely unreasonable goal. And so my completely unreasonable goal is in 1 year's time, I want to be in the kind of shape where I can go run an ultra marathon. And not only an ultra marathon, I want to run it through the Gobi Desert. This is a place that I'd been living in China. I had wanted to see the far west of China, a place that I heard was totally beautiful. And I saw some photos. I was literally laying in bed with these injuries and looked up this race that was run through the Gobi and said, hey, this is it. This is what I think can keep me nose to the grindstone in my rehab, get me strong again. And with the right motivation and the right daily actions, I can achieve it. That was the big thought, at least. And started putting in the time, started the rehab took a couple months, as I referenced, before I could even really start running in a meaningful way, and particularly before I was able to train. But yeah, I had this goal, 250 kilometers. It was a stage race, meaning it's like Tour de France style, where actually you run effectively a marathon a day for 6 days. And in that time, you have to be able to manage your injuries. You have to carry all the food on your back. You've got to have all the equipment you need, including, you know, a bedding or a pillow or the basics of how you're going to live out there.
Again, like, I just want to back up for half a second, but when I'm thinking I need to recover from an injury, and truthfully, it's not a motorcycle, it's like I stubbed my toe, I'm thinking like, you know, I just want to like get back to wearing, you know, a pair of shoes that's comfortable. How did you decide the solution to this really big injury was to do something super extreme? Like, I think most people are just looking to get back on their feet.
Yeah. And I think the way I'm wired, if I had set a totally reasonable, modest goal, I think it would have taken me longer to heal and longer to get ready. And I was in a funk. I was feeling, I was feeling kind of down each day, because the thing that I totally loved that recharged me was now completely out of sight. And I didn't know if I'd ever get that back. And so
this kind of propelled you like quicker, because
totally,
you had something so big to deal with. So you were like, all right, I have to triple my pace. Is that what you were thinking?
A little bit. I need to be resolute in this. And a big goal I knew was going to be the one that that really motivated me to endure some of the hardships of rehab and then getting back onto to my training.
That's crazy. So okay, you get through the training, you sign up, and it's 6 marathons in a row. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and it's that's right. It's 6 days of running, and they put you out into a remote village in a place in Xinjiang province, the far west of China, the edge of the Gobi Desert, and they 109 people, many of which are there's literally an Olympic medalist. There are professional runners, sponsored runners, guys with 20 years of marathon experience. And then there's the very rare kind of weekend warrior, a guy like myself that doesn't have as much of the background, no name in the sport. But each of us there were there for our own reasons, many of which I think were to chase a big, daunting challenge and see what we're made of. And that was a unifying factor between the 109 of us from all corners of the earth.
Unbelievable. And you get out there, you start running, and you're doing great, and you had an injury, right?
That's right. Through 3 days, I think I was surprising competitors, I was surprising the support crew and myself with how well I was doing. I was cruising in 9th place, and feeling very strong, actually. I was about 120 kilometers in when we're crossing a river. We had to cross 3 rivers throughout, and on the second one, as I'm running across this, I step on a stone, but my foot gets pinched, actually, and so I end up torquing my knee. So all of my body weight, this heavy bag I'm carrying, twists to the left as my foot is pinned, and so even though my legs are numb from this ice cold water that I'm running through, I feel a bolt of lightning hit the kneecap there, and I knew instantly something was very, very wrong, and I'm trying to crawl my way out of this river before I get, you know, hypothermic or whatever else. And
oh my God.
Get to the other side. And I'm just in a very bad way. I'm seeing stars basically with just this pain. And I have another 10 kilometers, 6 miles to go before the next medical checkpoint. And so some of the most excruciating running I've ever done. And really it was a hobble. It was me kind of jumping off my right foot just to move another foot at a time, literally another foot at a time, before I was able to get some medical treatment with a really, really tight bandaging around this, what turns out to be a sprained left knee. Then I take, you know, I'm given some basically super ibuprofen, some painkillers to help kind of numb that, some ice around the knee, and then some water too. I was becoming dehydrated out there with all the both mental energy and the physical energy of getting me to that checkpoint. The guy was offering to kind of evacuate me. He had a pickup truck nearby. But as I told you, I'd been thinking about this race for a full year, and this was how I was going to prove to myself that I'm still am a runner. I'm still in this. And told him, hey, no, I'd love a banana, please, so I have some more energy. And then I'm going to go try to make it the next kilometer, the next kilometer, the next kilometer, onto the next medical checkpoint, and then onto that day's camping ground, so I could get some sleep, elevate the leg, and then worry about tomorrow.
Right. So if that's not incentive enough to call it, if I remember correctly, right, you told me this quickly in passing it as you were leaving one day, but you had sunburned both of your feet. Is that the next obstacle you endure?
Yeah. So the Gobi Desert is unrelenting. During the day, the sun is scorching you. And so I'm wearing long kind of Under Armour style pants, long Under Armour style shirt during the day, and you're sweating, you know, you're sweating like a pig out there trying to keep cool. But then at night, it's extremely, extremely cold. You're in this desert situation. The winds are unrelenting. The landscapes are brutal. And so, yeah, every one of us, you know, I had terrible blisters like I've never had on my feet. I have completely dehydrated. Even though I'm drinking a ton of water, I'm completely dehydrated, as is, I think, everyone. We're wind whipped from this, you know, unrelenting wind. The sun is bearing down on you. My lips are unbelievably chapped. Eventually, I'm trying to warm up after finishing one of these marathons, and I'm laying out in the sun when, basically I fall asleep out there, finally getting some rest. My body just needs it. I wake up, and then adding insult to injury, the top of my feet are badly, badly sunburned. And oh man, it's just embarrassing, because then I go to the medical tent. You again. Yeah. Now I need some sun, like some sun care for these poor feet. Give me some lotion. So they, right. I was the butt of a lot of jokes that week. Let's put it that way.
Oh my God. Oh my God. So you made it to the end. I mean, you succeeded despite sunburned feet, sprained knee. And was it like, did it give you that sense you were looking for? Did you feel that completion? What does it feel like at the end of these things?
It feels really special for a number of reasons. First off, you know, one of my motivations was to see and experience this remote part of China, a place I had been living for more than a year at that point. And I wanted to just experience it. And the amount of local culture you get out there is amazing. So you're greeted with a drum circle, these guys pounding a big drum as you finish. You then see all these friends that you've made over the past week, people that have been supporting you, that have been with you through thick and thin, mm-hmm. as it were. And then you have, in this case, Dr. Sharp and Dr. Nyberg, the two guys that literally helped me to finish this. They're right there at the finish line,
yeah.
You know, giving me a bear hug. And so, yeah, it was. I'm not a very emotional guy, actually. I try to be in touch with – I sometimes lose touch maybe with my feelings more than I should. But this was a moment where, you know, I had to succumb to emotion. I just finished this kind of odyssey, and there are these two guys that kind of believed in me midway through when I was starting to question myself, and these guys were there. And so yeah, it is a special feeling, especially when you've overcome challenges getting to the start line and then challenges during the race, to be able to celebrate that with people who helped you to help you finish strong.
So Greg, I'm dying to like transition, because you and I have never discussed this. And honestly, I've never had the opportunity to talk to somebody who's had a background like yours with such incredible adventures and experiences and pushing your body to such limits. This podcast is all about authenticity, finding a life that feels authentic. How do you think about authenticity? With somebody who has put themselves into these crazy positions and really chased after passions, just no matter how much of an obstacle you faced, what does that mean to you to have an authentic life?
Yeah, I think at root, in my perspective, it's about living in accordance with your values, living in accordance with the goals that you set for yourself, in such a fashion that you're marching to the beat of your own drum. You're really looking for things that fulfill you on a day-to-day basis and working toward the things that matter most to you. At core, and as generic or cliche as that might sound, that's how I look at it. And I'm very fortunate, I think, because I had a family. I had parents that were not only understanding of my eccentricities and, but they were also encouraging. I think they saw, hey, this our son's a little rebellious, yes, but he, you know, also has a couple of redeeming factors, and we want to, you know, invest in his development. We want to support him in finding kind of who he is and what he's about. And I think there are probably a lot of people that don't have that situation growing up. And so I'm super lucky that as a very young person, as a teenager, I had a family that was really supportive in that fashion. I had amazing mentors, amazing coaches and teachers growing up, incredible professors during college that helped kind of mentor me and helped me figure out kind of who I am, what I'm about. It just gave me a lot of confidence to kind of go on a path that might look a little different than others, whether that's business or training or anywhere in between. And that for me is authenticity. It's finding out what's your true north and then enlisting the help of friends and family, spiritual influences, and the people around you kind of rally toward that. Each of us are struggling to, I think, find out who we are, what we're all about, and we can all do more to help each other in that quest.
And when you say how to find your true north and you're living in accordance with your values and goals, how do you do that? How do you figure that out for yourself?
Yeah, I think it's probably a lifelong quest. And in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, if I'm listening to this podcast, I'll probably laugh at myself. You know, oh, at 27, you thought you had it all figured out and how wrong I was. But at this moment, the way that I do it now, first of all, I acknowledge that it is a long game. It's a long path. And that at the moment, I probably only have a tiny fraction of things really figured out. But the way that I do it for now, I try to read a lot. I try to expose myself to different teachings and different wisdom. On my desk in front of me here, I keep two books. I keep a copy of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, the great Stoic teacher, the former emperor of Rome, which phenomenal wisdom there. And the second book in front of me is the Bible, a book I've been studying since boyhood with grandma. And these two are, you know, this is part of how I find my true north. And for everyone, it will be different, but find whether it's ancient texts of wisdom or contemporary ideas that inspire you. I think reading and then reflecting, putting various ideas into action, reflecting on those actions, going back to the drawing board, reading more, enhancing your understanding. I think that iterative process and doing as many of these cycles and repetitions as you can, again, daily action, right? That's how I think you can get a better handle on your true north and find something that really resonates with you in a deep way. And I think you're not going to quite know it until you experience it, until you feel it. But that's what's worked for me. And I find the more that I write on what I'm thinking about, what I'm learning, the more I'm underlining in my Bible and in meditations, the more I'm able to get to kind of the next development level, to get new insights, to get new ideas, and then put those into practice so that they're shaping my life.
Yeah, it's definitely about taking action from that space. But curious to just ask you, like, you know, you mentioned you got to feel it. So, you know, stress, fears, life pressures, right? Sometimes we make inauthentic decisions. And you're saying, you know, you just feel it when it's authentic. What is that experience like for you? So you're faced with a decision, you're trying to figure out what to do. And I think this is sort of the crux of an authentic life, is like, how do you navigate those moments and pick what makes sense for you? Do you have the connection to yourself to make those decisions? What does it mean to you to feel it versus not feel it?
Yeah, absolutely. In previous years, I would be hit with a challenge of some kind, a big decision I need to make, or some kind of big task that needs doing. And my impulse was to surrender, actually. I would surrender by trying to put it out of my mind. I would crack open a six-pack with a buddy, and instead of kind of addressing what needed addressing, would try to escape it, would surrender in that moment. And not only was that not the right way to approach that particular challenge, but it actually led down a negatively kind of reinforcing path where, hey, that was easy. I forgot all about those challenges on Friday night. Well, now it's Saturday, and I have the same opportunity to drown out my this challenge, this big decision that needs to be made.
Yeah, and I might change that word surrender with avoidance, right? Like, totally. Just, yeah.
Totally. And it's so I come from a background actually with there's plenty of those kind of blemishes. The way that I've tried approaching it going forward, and that I've have found more success here recently is reading and reflecting and thinking about these ideas than a big decision that, you know, there's no clear answer. There's probably no right answer. And the answers are all seem really terrible. Like there's no easy decision here. And any alternative leaves me in maybe a rough place, me and my team. Well, once you've reflected on these ideas that, you know, Aurelius faced as emperor of Rome, fighting these, you know, barbarian invasions from the north, or I think about, you know, super inspiring for me are the apostles who that go out and are trying to spread the gospels after Christ's crucifixion and the adversity that they face. And that, oh, my goodness, whenever I think I'm facing, you know, having a bad day, I think about these guys who are literally facing injury and death on a daily basis. And here's how they, you know, addressed it. And I think about these things when I'm running. I think about these things when I'm out on a mountain climb. And it's extremely inspiring for me because it helps with things in context. And then it brings a lot of clarity, and it helps me, you know, keep my ship steering toward that true north so that I'm not second guessing myself. I'm not resorting to alcohol or other distractions, and instead I'm able to face these things head on, because it's not easy living a, you know, life day to day, and it's not easy trying to build a company. And these decisions need to be made, and I find this to work for me.
And so when you've gone on your run and you've reflected and you've read, how do you know when you've gotten there? Like, what is the experience like when you say, yep, you know what? It just feels right.
So I try to be action oriented with just about everything. Cause I think energy and enthusiasm paired with action is kind of a magical formula that's been working for me the last several years. And so how do I know it's clicked? Well, I'm running and then all of a sudden clear next actions come into view. Mm. And I was, hey, here's this big challenge. Well, here are the three things I need to do to actually solve this. That's when I know that, hey, this is good. And yeah. If I'm out on a run, you know, I might turn around then or start heading back to home. And by the time I'm back to my place or to the office, I'm literally sitting down and I'm writing that memo or drafting that email. And then I'll shower off, finish thinking about this, and then go send the memo to the responsible party, or go actually write and then send that email.
Conversely, to something that isn't feeling very authentic, it just doesn't click together.
Doesn't click. And it feels, I call it the Gordian knot, where it's just this ball of yarn and you have no idea how it actually fits together. That's how a lot of these things start in your brain, where there's no obvious decision. You're not quite sure what to do. And it's only in that moment where, yeah, it starts unraveling itself. Oh, here's how this fit together. Now I see it. And you have the confidence then to act upon that.
Yeah. I love that. That's such a cool way of thinking about it. And so I'm almost afraid to ask our final question here, but what are your favorite habits, practices, techniques, apps? What do you think about when setting up routines for yourself for an authentic life? I'm sure the list is, I feel like we could set up a website for you where you could just put in like...
I'm a keep it simple, stupid kind of guy, because my brain, I overwhelm myself with too many bells and whistles. So I do try to keep it simple. The thing that's really, really worked for me the last 2 years is running my life through Evernote, a popular app. And I have it right on my desktop, and it enables me to create kind of folders for the relevant impact areas of my business. I have a folder for kind of habits I'm working to build. I have a spreadsheet and a checklist of things that I'm, you know, daily actions I'm trying to build in, a section where I'm noting Bible verses that I've been meditating on. So I'm able to kind of run my life through this. And the big advantage is that I use less kind of mental brain RAM on remembering this memo I need to note, or remembering, you know, the latest financials. I can just store them right in Evernote. And that, you know, if you limited me to one recommendation for listeners, I'd say try out Evernote and customize it to suit you. And it's been big for me with personal accountability, big with me for personal organization. And I'm much more productive and also just fulfilled day to day as well. I feel less overwhelmed and less as if I'm continually Sisyphus pushing a stone up a hill, and more as if I'm kind of on top of things, which feels good. It gives you a lot more confidence and a lot more brain power than to address the things, the Gordian knots in your life.
Sweet. And, you know, I got to tell you, like, I couldn't figure out Evernote for the life of me. I've heard everybody loved it. And somebody said to me, I kept saying to my friends, why? Tell me what's so great. I look at it. It looks so basic. And this guy said to me, I don't know. I can't tell you what's so great about Evernote. All I know is that I can't live without it. And I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. So I tried it and I got to be honest with you, it is amazing. I love that tool and I don't use very many tools either. Greg, this was so insightful, so interesting. Your story is just inspired. I may even try to run around the block tomorrow.
Hey, you would love to go on a run next time I'm in Chicago. So please, we'll get in shape together.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to hear more about you, your adventures, and your company, where would they find you?
Yeah, so you can check out my personal website, gregnance.org, to learn more about some of the resources I reference. You can also connect with me on Twitter. My username is @Greg, G-R-E-G, Nance, N-A-N-C-E. And yeah, would love to hear from you on either my website or on Twitter there.
Awesome. Thank you, Greg, so much. And I look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Hey, thank you again for the invitation. An honor to share here today.
Awesome.